I think most everybody in this crowd is familiar, but for anybody who's not, Tuesday evenings is a weekly lecture. And we have been going for, I guess, 10 weeks now. It's 10 weeks in the fall, 10 in the spring. So tonight is our final Tuesday evening for this season. And we are ending the season in a lovely way with the artist Catherine Bradford here to present her work. You will recall that Catherine was the Modern's first 2017-2018 focus artist. She is known for her enthusiastic and self-assured paintings, described as containing symbolic imagery such as swimmers, superheroes, and ships, a cast of characters often caught in mid-motion, floating, flying, and drifting against bold brushstrokes in luminous fields of color. As Michael Blair wrote for Glass Tire in a review for the exhibition that was here, quote, hidden in her cavalier brushwork are wise and focused decisions. And I think that's aptly said. With a BA from Bryn Mawr, an MFA from Purchase, and now represented by Canada in New York, Philip Haverkamp in Berlin, and Monica DeCardenas in Milan, Catherine Bradford has been recognized for work with a Guggenheim Fellowship in 2011 and in 2012 a Joan Mitchell Foundation Award. She has also been awarded a Pollack Krasner Grant and two awards from the American Academy of Arts and Letters. She was a resident faculty at Skowhegan School of Painting and Sculpture in 2016 and 2017, and has been senior critic at Yale School of Art in New Haven. Her work is in the collections of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, the Brooklyn Museum, the Portland Museum, that's Portland, Maine, and the Dallas Museum of Art. Recent exhibitions include the New Orleans Biennial Prospect 4 last fall, a solo exhibition at Adam and Ullman Gallery in Portland, Oregon, opening actually this month, and in 2019, her work will be included in an exhibition at Crystal Bridges Museum in Bentonville, Arkansas, which is devoted to images of Superman and Superwoman. And, of course, as mentioned, there was Focus Catherine Bradford, curated by Allison Hurst here at the Modern. I doubt that Catherine necessarily set out to be an inspiration for other artists or to have a career that offers hope that other artists can find hope in and aspire to. But some things are inevitable. And given her career efforts, choices, and the honest nature of her art, she has done just that. As a non-painter, her work makes me want to paint, to be comfortable with doubt and other realities of making art, and to strike out with a commitment that leads to confidence. It is such a pleasure to have her back tonight to share her work and practice with us on this last Tuesday evening. So if you would, please join me in welcoming Catherine Bradford.
Thank you for that nice introduction. I love being called enthusiastic, having hope, and making you want to paint. That's the best. It's great to be back at this most beautiful museum. Thank you so much for coming to hear this talk. I'm going to talk about some of the paintings that I showed here and give them a little context. I'll show you some earlier work and some of the work that's in my studio now. So I'll talk for about 45 minutes, and then perhaps if you have any questions, we can have a question and answer. So these two paintings were the first two you would see when you walked in the museum area. It shows a person bending over at a sandy shore looking for something. If you got close to this painting, you would see that there's quite a lot of layering in the paint under her feet. And the other painting is at night, and it shows a group of people in a kind of ritual gesture. Here's a close-up. They're raising their hands in the air and either kicking up a lot of fairy dust or moonlight is coming down on them. They are also in bathing suits. I do a lot of paintings of people, swimmers, and I'll try and answer why I do that. Alison Hirst came to New York and she saw this exhibition, which was at Speroni Westwater. She saw a room full of similarly colored paintings. They were all nocturnes. They were all dark. Here's another view. I always liked this. It was taken by the security camera who caught someone inexplicably doing a headstand in the gallery. And here is the room at Focus at this museum. What I really appreciated was that my paintings were grouped according to color, and this was kind of the blue swimming room. And to give you an introduction of how the show looked, I'm going to show you a video that a friend of mine took. He came over from Amsterdam. This is Solar Eclipse. Here maybe you'll see people you know at the opening. This was the middle room with the two paintings I just showed you. This is a swimming pool in the sky. That's my sister who came with me from New York. This is the ritual painting. He wanted you to see the brushstrokes, but as you get close, it doesn't necessarily see the brushstrokes. And this painting of disparate. And then the final room was full of watery subjects, underwater figures. This is called Overwater, Underwater. And a long painting of a waterfall, and then a painting of people in water swimming. And there I am, chatting with people at the opening. So you kind of get the layout. There were three rooms. The first room had a greenish cast. The middle room was kind of summery. And this room was all phthalo turquoise, which was a color I had just discovered and used. Here I am talking to the docents, I think, standing in front of a painting called Waterfall. This is a diptych. I put two paintings together. So this is one of the largest paintings I had done. And why do I have two men in suits heading for a waterfall? I tell you, when I finished this painting, I had to step back and ask myself the same question. What does this portend? The truth is that the color I was using, this phthalo turquoise, if you add white, it turns into a kind of wonderful blue watercolor. If you don't add any white at all, it's very dark. It's that black. And I had started out putting pink down, or magenta, one of my favorite colors. Sometimes gets in my hair. So I put the pink down. I put the phthalo turquoise down with a very wide brush. And I could see both the pink flesh color and the very dark. And that is why I put suits on them, because I almost saw it in the water. I had to flesh it out. I had to put in a necktie. I had to put in hands. I had to put in faces. Almost more importantly, I wanted the heads to look alive. I didn't want this to be a painting of two dead bodies, because I'm enthusiastic and full of hope. So, to me, this is a painting about apprehension or about unexpected encounters. Very soon, these two people in suits are going to flip over the waterfall. I don't think they're in harm's way. They don't know they're in harm's way, or do they? But anyway, this is the moment that I wanted to get in this painting. There it is in my studio as I was working on it. You see, the faces are kind of lively. The painting right across from it also has people in water, two heads bobbing, and another person who is also in a suit. He's not a swimmer, really. He's probably in some kind of dark jacket. And I realized when I did this painting that if you put people in the water who aren't in bathing suits, you get a very different tone to the painting. It's not about summer fun. It's not about leisure time. It's got to be about something else. And since I made the painting, I felt responsible for, I don't know, building a narrative around that. My favorite part of the painting is the hand touching the water, is the connection between the figure and the water, because for some reason, for years and years, I love putting human people in water, but also I'm putting them in paint. I'm making them with paint. After I did the dark men, the dark suits, I went back to my studio and I thought, you know, that's interesting. Someone in a bathing suit and someone in a suit. So I did this easel size painting. But I looked at it and I thought, so what? I don't do preparatory drawings, and I don't do small paintings and then big paintings. So I work things out in small paintings. I tried that again with a guy in a suit and another guy in a suit with a different composition. And then I tried a bigger painting where I put the figure at the top. This is in my studio now. And under him is a man in a bathing suit, looking very unprotected, very vulnerable, very exposed, really. And the man at top doesn't look that mighty. He isn't up there, I don't think, as a superior figure. But I saw an interesting relationship here, a relationship of power, maybe, or perhaps a human relationship between these two figures. And I had the man in the suit standing in water. This is the third painting in that room, which shows different kinds of people all in water. I've done this subject a lot. Here's an earlier one where I was going to make a grid of three people, three people, three people. But as I was making it, I realized I sort of enjoyed the difference between all of them. They were different colors. They seemed to be from different places. And instead of filling in the sketch marks, I just left them as kind of ghost figures. Why? Because I liked the way it looked. And because perhaps there was some kind of metaphor there, or mystery, shall we say. Here's an earlier one that I did, which is very similar to the one that was in this focus exhibit. But if you compare the two, the earlier one is much more even, and I kind of kicked up my heels a little more with the later one. The earlier one, the figures are placed in a kind of zigzag rhythm. In the one that was in this museum, I think I was a little bolder with the color, with the degree of finish. I think I got more diversity, maybe, in who happened to be in this pool. I like the idea that we're all in a kind of primordial water together, all of us, struggling forward or to stay afloat. This is another earlier one where I showed people standing in water. And what I like about this one, or what started to interest me, was the transparency. That you could see the parts of the bodies through the water. That, ever since I began painting, I would take my brush, sweep it across the canvas, and I could still see the history under it. I could see through the painting to another layer. Incidentally, I walked around this museum, and you can get that same sensation if you look out at the wonderful bodies of water surrounding the museum. They act as a plane that the water bounces off, but you can also see through it. Yes, then I turned around and looked at the art, but I love that part of this museum. So this painting, which was the fourth painting in that room, Overwater, Underwater, shows a swimmer at the top with a diving mask on, and he's looking perhaps through the water to the lightest part of the water. And then there's a second figure right here, which I wanted to look like you were looking through the water. This person is underwater, swimming through very clear water. So I had my two wishes: over the water, and then the sensation of looking through the water at someone swimming. Which, why do I keep hitting on this again and again? I think it's a visual thing. I was a swimmer. I was on swimming teams as a teenager and in college. I lived by the water. I spent many years on the coast of Maine, where there is a ocean and lakes and tides and wonderful salty smell in the air. But even more important to that, I think that these paintings of people in the water offer up a kind of metaphor, a kind of unending metaphor for lots of things: plunging, diving, soaking, wading, all those words that are part of our vocabulary to describe the human experience. This was, I did in 2016. What a green. It isn't really this color green. It's a little nicer. These are swimmers with the swimming lanes, and I had them just barely beneath the surface. And here are two swimming pool paintings. The one with the moon was in the focus show, and the one on the left you can't really, you're not really seeing through the water, but I inadvertently created the sensation of something being in that pool, something that maybe is unnameable, maybe just the mark making of a maker, of a painter. And why I put the red rim pool up in the sky, or perhaps just at night, I think it gave maybe a more elemental, maybe gave it a larger scope. It wasn't someone's backyard pool. This painting I did in 2015, and it's called Fear of Waves, and it shows swimmers running away from two rushing sets of waves. Here's a detail of that. I think just by getting the paint to kind of drown this person a little, I got the effect of a figure in the water. One of the writers writing about my work said, Catherine Bradford, it's almost as if Catherine Bradford allows figures to appear in her painting rather than actually make them, which is true because I'm painting very quickly with strokes. So I'm not delineating anything very, as you notice, I often don't put the face in. This is Carol Dunham, who has a nice painting in the first floor of the museum. I saw him do what I wanted to do and what I was interested in doing with these paintings, which was to use paint as a way to indicate another area, another atmosphere, a kind of layer of transparency. That big boat painting was in the Museum of Modern Art. It just, when I walked in, I went, oh, there it is. There's my world. Not quite, but I get a lot of inspiration from looking at other artists' work. This is a little painting of that I did recently of an outdoor tub. And a painting I started, I had a lot of energy. I was really putting the white paint on very freely. And these paint strokes looked kind of like fish. So I let them be fish, but I finished the painting a little with a little more detail. But what I achieved was a kind of watery look to all the figures. They almost look like they're made out of water. I actually added a lot of water to the paint, thin layers of paint. And the two fish are there. I left them there. They could be jumping out of the water, or all these people could be underwater. I don't think this is just a swimming scene. Somebody suggested that maybe this is a scene of, whoop. Now, how'd that happen? I want to go backwards, yeah. That maybe this is a scene of people passing into the Netherland, into the underworld, into the other world. And this painting is in my studio now. This is where I've taken the water theme. Here is a person kneeling in water and a jug or a bottle of water is coming down out of the sky, pouring down over the shoulder, not very realistically, but I like the way it looked, so I left it. Or it could be paint. It is all those things. Lady in water. I also use a kind of transparency to do the clothing of people, like this painting of three figures in very big gowns. You can, if you got up close, you could see right through. They are entrapped a little bit by these gowns, or perhaps made more elegant. And here we have the first image I showed you of someone on the edge of water, bending over, a beachcomber, looking for things. My challenge with this painting was when to stop. I thought about putting another arm in. I thought about putting a head in. I thought about putting little beach slippers in. But the more I looked at it, it seemed like it was enough. And there's a painting here by Milton Avery of two figures, which are just almost silhouettes, light-colored silhouettes. Milton Avery is someone that I admire and look to, who suggests by the body language and by the form and the shape, he suggests figures rather than actually illustrating them. This is an earlier theme of looking through the water, trying to find something. When someone wrote about this painting, they said, and if you look closely, there are 7 or 8 bodies in that water, which I thought I had covered up from an earlier painting, but this writer was right. Throughout this, were early suggestions of people swimming. And not for the first time, I made it somewhat in outer space with colored planets floating above. So this is the same painting, 2 different photos. Allison, which one is more correct?
The one on the left.
Yeah, I would say. But this is to remind me, when I was interviewed during the Focus show, Tyler Green asked me the question, and this is his exact wording, Catherine Bradford, what gave you permission to make the water in this painting purple? And I remember his wording because I thought to say permission was so odd because I've never thought as a maker of art about the word permission. I've been inspired. I've been dismissive, turned off, turned on by things, but I never thought I had permission. So I thought that I should remind him that throughout the history of art, artists have taken a lot of liberties with color. I mean, why shouldn't I make the water purple? Looks great. I brought up this painting, this famous painting by Matisse, where he puts a green stripe down the portrait, the face of his wife, Madame Matisse. He and his friends were using such bold color, they were termed fauves, wild beasts. It doesn't seem so wild to us, does it? In fact, this painting is so famous, it's almost totally accepted. And you see Madame Matisse, a step-by-step art lesson. They've exaggerated the color even more. made it even more wild beast. So after we talked about the Fauves, I think Tyler Green accepted my color choices more. This was in the first room of focus. It's a castle with fire and smoke coming out the window and a suggestion of people at the bottom, perhaps looking at the fire, perhaps endangered. It's a bright painting, but it may be a foreboding painting. And I realized that I did this painting right in the summer, right after my grandsons had visited me. We had made a cardboard castle together, which was getting very tattered. So together, we took it outside and lit it on fire. Do we have some sound here?
Your Majesty!
No, Kathy, what the hell?
That's my grandson.
Damn it.
This was an extremely satisfying thing to do. And we...
Okay, quiet, I'm going to start taping in 3, 2, 1.
We both took videos of it. And I've looked at this video many times, and somehow I just... love watching that castle fall apart. Castle, fortress, power, might, too big to fail. And it all ends up in ash. So that may or may not be the impetus for my Fort Worth castle. Maybe it was just the light. I love to get a painting that is luminous, and I often stop painting when I feel there is a light coming, especially from the middle, like a Rothko, like a fire. Fire, ha! Huh. This is a painting that's in my studio now. I took the fire idea and all the people together, saints and sinners saved, and had magenta logs burning. What's going to become of this painting? That's what I have to face when I go home. Here's another painting that's in my studio now. And I think, again, this was my urge to put disparate people in the same, this time not pool, but the same rectangle. I've got a swimmer, I've got a guy with a cape, and two figures entering. And I suppose I'd like them to all belong. Now I'm going to go way back. This was my thesis show when I was in graduate school a long time ago. And I remember, where's the color? Why didn't I use color? I remember the faculty saying, it looks like you've been looking at what's going on in the galleries and stuff, Bradford. And it's true, I was. I was very influenced by... They also said, what's with the polka dots? But you know, I don't think of these as polka dots. I think of them as points of light. And that's something that I've gone after, whether it's a night sky or lights. This is Terry Winters in the 80s. I probably did see this. I probably did want to make a painting like this. I thought that's what a painting was. I started out, as you can see, as an abstract painter. I thought of myself as a mark maker. This is also Terry Winters' painting from the 80s. I think it was the bottom of this painting where it almost looks like a code. I'm not sure what he's trying to say, but I believe in his intention to to make it meaningful. He's mapping out the surface. And I wanted to do paintings like that. I was influenced by these three artists. The book, the open book, you probably recognize. That is Philip Guston. There's a beautiful Philip Guston here that I just saw. Right above that is the colored strokes of Joan Snyder. Her stroke paintings of the 70s were the first paintings that I saw that made me want to paint, as Terry said. When I saw these paintings, I thought, oh, I want to do that. And the hash marks, no, that's not what they're called. What's the printing term for that? Anyway, that's by Jasper Johns. It almost looks like he took his four fingers and dipped them in paint and made, it's a drawing term. Cross-hatching. Thank you. Cross-hatch. He took the cross-hatch mark. That appealed to me a lot. When I started painting, I was living in Maine, and these were my teachers early on. These were poets and painters. The poets would invite us all to hear their poems, and then we would put our paintings up on the wall. So I always associated poetry and painting. And I thought that painting was, of course, about your experience. You take your brush, dip it in the paint, and make a mark. Somehow talking about your humanity. I'm still in touch with many of these people. I used to live in Maine in the 80s, then I moved to New York. No, I lived in Maine in the 70s. I moved to New York in the 80s, and I go back each summer. This is an early abstract painting of mine, which was one of the first times I saw that I had gotten a certain kind of light coming from within the painting. And you see those polka dots again. I thought of this as a TV light, like black and white TV. And then that gradually turned into figures. These are little white bathing caps at night. This is a very small painting, early painting. You need a slower progression? Okay. Here's the barn in Maine that I make my paintings in. I had, at the time I said, I really want to be an artist. I want to make paintings. I had already had twins, a boy and a girl. Had an organic garden, a dog, a wood stove. I had to very gradually make my life so that I could do what I do now, which is work in my studio every day. This is an early painting, and I can see, looking back at it, how I could have gone, I could go in the direction of water, transparency, and all the things I've been talking about. If someone had come along and said, why don't you put someone in a bathing suit standing in this, I would have rejected that idea because I believed in abstraction at the time as the most forward-looking way to make a painting. Light-filled, maybe night, dis. This was a direction that I could have leaned into and done paintings about the ecstatic nature of the cosmos. But I didn't. These paintings gradually made a place, And I began to see references that I wanted to explore. This looked like a theater with a stage and maybe seats, just somewhat like the seats I'm looking at right now. I think I wanted it to be the sea and the sky, but it was so many other things that I kept going on that in that direction, and I would make a field of color, and then if I saw a suggestion of a boat, a person in a boat, I would go with that. And the points of light inevitably turned into sky. One of my favorite topics, someone looking at something full of wonder and enchantment. A very early swimming painting. I had to get bigger, bolder, and more experimental. Ship painting, but really, there I go. I made the hull so that you could see through it and had it festooned with light. So it's a celebratory kind of boat. This is six small rowboats coming towards you with figures standing in them, a kind of pageantry, a kind of grouping, a kind of community, a kind of out in the open ocean at night, which I thought was one of the most exciting subjects to paint, even though I can tell you I don't go out in the open ocean at night much. Fiery colors. I think in my final minutes, I will show how this painting, this slide is not very good, how I got to the subject of these two paintings. This shows a tub in the sky full of men with no clothes on. It's called Fathers. It was done on a drop cloth. You can see the seam of the drop cloth running through it. These two paintings were in a show I had in 2016 at my gallery in New York, Canada. You can see the waves a little more clearly. There's a detail of Fear of Waves. This Fear of Waves painting started as a vertical painting, and that's why the drips are running down. But I realized there was nothing going on at the top. I liked the idea of people fleeing out of the way of the water. I had to write Fear of Wave on the top. I didn't have room for the S because I misjudged. But it was very unsatisfactory to me. The top just seemed blank. And one day when it was lying on the floor, I realized that I could turn it up vertically and so that there was a diagonal from top to bottom rather than across like a horizon. But the more I looked at this, I thought it was a little lame. I wanted the idea of the surf coming towards them, but I needed something stronger. So I painted in the waves, which for some reason this picture is blocking out. But here are the two paintings before I painted the waves and after I painted the waves. So that was the final touch that I arrived at. These, again, are different colors just because of the photo. So one writer wrote that she could hear the swimmers squealing. She didn't know whether it was out of delight or fear. I think this painting is more about fear than it is about waves at the beach. Before this was a pool in the sky, this painting looked like this. And I knew it wasn't good. And it was the biggest painting in my studio. And the show was coming up. It was haunting me. That's the really agonizing part about making art, is when you know it's lame. So I went down to Florida to the art fair, and I looked out onto this scene. I had never been to Miami. I felt I was really coming home. These beautiful pools at night. It was warm. I grew up in New England in a family that didn't go to Florida. You were supposed to put your skates on, not go to Florida. So this was a revelation to me. There were warm pools down there. And I sat outside and I took some pictures with my iPhone. Not this close. I used the magnifier to get this. And then I knew what I had to do, and I ran back to New York and painted out the airplane and painted this just in time to be part of the show. I think it's... I'm thinking of all the things people have said to me about this. This is where all the fathers go. Or these are forefathers. This reminds me, they say, of a sauna under a dome of stars and so on. So with that image, I think I will end. Thank you all very much. Yes, I am taking questions.
Okay, so you said some of your paintings were small. How small is small?
Well, this size. I'm not really good at numbers. 11 by 14, 20 by 16. For a long time, I did small paintings, and it's just been in the last several years that I've made them large. And I knew this museum in particular has very large proportions. You walk in the front door and you're in a lobby with a very high ceiling. You're like, everything's giant in here. And so I tried to rise to the occasion and do large work. Yes.
I'm really intrigued by your process, what you do as an artist, and I'm wondering, when you get ready to make a painting, or when you go into the studio, do you set out to make a painting or a particular painting?
What do you think?
I think you set out to make a painting, and a particular painting begins to take form.
That's exactly right. However, well, I often make that point that I find the image as I paint. It suggests things to me. However, I've been painting for decades, so I have what you might call a vocabulary and things I return to, which I realize setting up the images for this talk that I'm kind of bonzo about transparency and light, and that I've been doing that over and over again in many different ways. And I probably will keep doing it. I think that as artists we are driven by certain obsessions. And you know what? I think I'll quote Katharine Hepburn, who said, There are some things I don't even discuss with myself. And I feel that way about the way I work, the way I do my work, because I think it's coming from my subconscious. Although I think there is a time to sit back and discuss it and look at it. And I'm very interested in people's reactions and what people write about it. But while I'm making a painting, I'm really in the moment and watching what's happening in front of me, which is really exciting. And it's a balance between not having control over what's happening and directing this film that's going on in front of you. Yes?
For a two-dimensional art form that you're working with, your work has incredible depth. I mean, it really looks like you could stick your hand right through that into the water and maybe touch someone, or you can see layer upon layer, and just a lot of depth. It's incredibly beautiful to look at. It's a cool thing to experience.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I think that I put a line of color at the bottom sometimes and the top to keep it flat, to bring you back to the surface. But I also know exactly what you mean, because I think it is this illusion that delights me. And it's perhaps when I stop the painting, I step back, and it has a certain light or a certain, I don't like the word magic, but it has a certain effect that seems enough. Yes?
I love how you work with acrylic, and I know you do acrylic and oil. Do they impact how you work differently when you choose them, or do you go in and say, I'm going to do acrylic now, or do they direct how the painting goes?
The earlier paintings were oil paintings because that's what my friends were doing. That seems what a real painter uses, oil painting. But in the past decade, I've switched to acrylic, and I did for a time use both because I was transitioning, as they say. But now I work only in acrylic. I love acrylic because I use fluorescent colors. These men sitting around are fluorescent red. I don't think I could get them to glow like that. I think the fluorescent acrylic paint has helped me a lot. And those impressionist painters, I just wonder what they would think of fluorescent yellow, fluorescent magenta. Would they think it was in very bad taste? Or would they envy me? I don't know.
Can I have two questions?
Yes.
So as you're painting, things start to take form, but eventually, I mean, to me, the work from the outside is so psychologically packed. There's just so much psychology to it. It's unavoidable, even if it's not what you set out to do. So I'm curious, you have to recognize that yourself, even if it's because people write about it. Does that get in your way, or does that affect you now as you go into paint?
I know what you're saying. I'm dealing with people, more than one person. And this whole year, if I get two people too close together, I think, oh no, this is like the morning news. This is like the Me Too situation. And I change it because I don't want to paint about that. So I do have control over what these figures are doing and what impression they're giving off.
Or does it actually give the work more depth?
I don't know. This is one of the big questions that I'm grappling with now. And it's kind of nice to be able to grapple, if I do say so, is how much should I join in the social and political conversation that's going on, which is everywhere. And there's a lot of artists speaking to race, just all the political change, all the changes that are happening in our society. And I think that's very important, and I wonder what my place in that is. Yes.
You showed a number of works by artists who you admire, and I wondered if Marston Hartley, who worked in Maine, was one of those artists also.
Marston Hartley is my big hero, and I'm so glad you brought him up. I love Marston Hartley because he had a certain awkwardness to the way he painted the figure. And all I have to do is look at some Marston Hartley men in this little pink bathing suit. And it's almost ridiculous, but it's very loving and bold of him because it's not skillful. It's wonderful. Thank you for bringing up Marston Hartley.
I think there's a spiritual kinship too.
And what do you mean by that? Spiritual?
Well, you mentioned kind of being in space and just a almost transcendental quality that some of his work has, that I think your work does too.
I think it's interesting that he went to Europe and he was exposed to the most sophisticated art of the time and for a while painted more abstractly, but then he returned to Maine and wanted to be known as the painter of Maine and did out-and-out landscapes, ocean, clouds, waves, and so on, which are great. Thank you all very much.